Greetings, welcome back to another ongoing series of Shiurim and Daf Yomi. My name is Yitzchak Et Shalom. We're now in Masachet Brachot Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, near the top of the Amud. We're going to pick up off of Rabbi Eliezer's definition of the ending time of Shema, which is Ad Sof HaShmirah Rishona, and the Gemara will use this as an opportunity for a Agadic discourse. Ad Sof HaShmirah, Ma'akas of Rabbi Eliezer. What's Rabbi Eliezer's position? Evidently, there were two different understandings about Ashmurot. Now, Mishmarot here is not the way we explained it in the Mishnah as guard duties of the city, but rather Mishmarot of Malachim during the course of the night. If he holds that there's three during the night, then Lema Ad Arba Shaot, he should say till 4 hours, because divide the night of 12 hours into three, it's 4 hours each. If, on the other hand, he thinks that there's four Mishmarot, then Lema Ad Shalosh Shaot, let him say until 3 hours into the night. The answer is, he certainly holds, like the majority opinion, that there's three. That he's trying to indicate to us something new, which is, that just as there is guard duty in the world, where people watch over the course of a night in three shifts, similarly, you have the same thing in heaven. The Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Shalosh Mishmarot Havei Alayla, Wa Kol Mishmarot Mishmar, Yoshev HaKadosh Baruch Hu V'Shoeg Ka'ari. The implication here is that at the turning of the Mishmarot, meaning at the beginning of the night, and at what we'll call 10 o'clock, and at 2 o'clock, if you have a 6 to 6 night, God roars, Shenemar Adonai Mimarom Yishag, Umimon Kodsho Yitain Kolo, Shaog Yishag Al Naveu. God roars from the heavens, and from his holy domicile. He gives his voice, he roars, but the roaring here is in the part of the infinitive, infinitive followed by the participle, so it's twice mentioned, Shaog Yishag, and therefore the allusion here is that there's three times during every night that God roars because of the Beit HaMikdash, Chorban Beit HaMikdash, and that means that there's three shifts, so there's three Mishmarot. Siman Davar. And now, what is the an indicator to us when that's happening? Mishmarah Rishonah Chamor Noer. You hear a donkey braying. Shnia, the second one is klavim tzvakim. Your dog's barking. Shlishit, the third one is tinok yonek b'shteimo. A child is suckling from his mother. V'shama separatim bala. And you can hear a woman speaking to her husband, ostensibly in bed. Now, that's the brayta. Ma'ika chashav Rabbi Eliezer. Now, in Rabbi Eliezer's figuring of these simanim, what's he taking into account? Itzchilat mishmarot kachashiv. If he says at the beginning of each mishmar, there's this sign. What do I need to sign at the beginning of the first Mishmar? Or Tahi, it's sunset. Or nightfall. If he's counting the end of each Mishmar, what do I need a siman for the last Mishmar? Yimamahu, it's daybreak. Must be the changing of the first shift into the second, and the changing of the second into the third, and the middle of the second. So, there's another way to read it, is kulu sof mishmarot kachashiv. All of them are the end of the mishmar. When the mishmar is over, God roars, and we hear these things through the walls. And then your challenge was, what do you need a siman for the end of the last mishmarot? It's daybreak. If somebody lives in a darkened house, they have no idea if it's light outside. So to know when it's Zman Kriyat Shema, if Leah does Zman Kriyat Shema, they don't know when Zman Kriyat Shema is. Kevan Diyishama Separatim Balin Shteimo. They inverted the order here. But once you hear a woman speaking to her husband and the child is nursing, Leikum V'Likri, he knows it's time to read Shema, even though he's in the dark. That's kind of his alarm clock. Yitzchak Bar Shmuel Mishmei Derav. So now we have an alternate position here. Shlosh Mishmarot Tavei Alai Lo Kol Mishmar Mishmar Yishev Hakadosh Baruch Hu V'Shoeg Ka'ari. Meaning the same idea that for each mishmar God is roaring, but there's an addition, which is Vomer, Oy labanim shavonotem echravti et peiti v'shavti et echaliv v'gletim v'vein numot ha'olam. Woe to the children that because of their sins I destroyed my own house, I burned my own sanctuary, and I exiled them among the nations. So that it's a more intense form, or we hear more the specific thing that it is that God is roaring about in these Mishmarot. And now following up on that, we have this story about Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta. Tan Rabbi Yossi, Pamachat Hayiti Malech Baderach. I was walking on the road, and Chas Tev Chorvah Chat Mechorvot Yerushalayim. So evidently he was in Yerushalayim, and he went into one of the ruined buildings of Yerushalayim, perhaps it had been a Beit Knesset. Lit Palel, and I went in there to daven. Ba Eliyahu Zachor LaTov Shmar Li Ala Petach. Eliyahu HaNavi came and waited for me by the door. Ad Shesiyamti Tefilati, until I finished my tefillah. Achar Shesiyamti Tefilati, Amar Li Shalom Alecha Rabbi. He greeted me. Beautiful night, beautiful way to greet him. Shalom Alecha Rabbi Umori. So I greeted him with even greater deference, Rabbi Umori. Amar Li Bni, Mimnei Ma Nichnas Telechor Vazu. So he called me son. Parenthetically, if you look at all the Agadot of Eliyahu, it seems to me that in every one of them, the word Ben shows up. And there's a reason for that. We'll discuss it in the, perhaps in the context of Gittin Davav. So why did you enter this Churvah? I told him, to daven. You should have davened on the road. So I should have davened on the road rather than to go into one of these ruined buildings. So I told him I was afraid to daven on the road because I was afraid that travelers would interrupt me. So you should have said a shortened tefillah. We'll get to that on Daf Chavtet and Lamed, the sugi of tefillah tzara. And I understood three things from him in this statement. First of all, you're not allowed to go into a churvah. At least to daven, but perhaps at all. You're allowed to daven on the road. And if you do are davening on the road, you do tefillah tzara. Okay, that's what I understood. In the meantime, continue the conversation. Marli bni ma kol shamata b'chorvazu. So he said, what voice, what sound did you hear here? Marti lo, shamati bat kol shamanahemet kiyona. I heard a heavenly voice that was cooing like a dove. V'yomeret oy labanim shamanotem hichravti et peiti v'sarafti et echali v'gleitim v'vein ha'umot. Same thing that we heard in the previous sugya, which is why this is being brought in, that this voice was cooing like a dove, saying, woe to my children, that to the children, that because of their sins, I destroyed my house, I burned my sanctuary, and I exiled them among the nations. Don't think that it was only at that moment the Shekhinah says that. Every day, three times a day, the Shekhinah says it. Ostensibly, three times a day is at the time that Bnei Yisrael are davening. When Am Yisrael comes into the Beit Knesset and they answer Yeshmei Rabbah to Kaddish, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he shakes his head, V'yomer, Asher Melech Shemekalsinu Tov Beit Tokach. Happy is a king who's praised in his own house like this. Malo La'av Shiglat Panav, Oilam Manim Shagalu Mi'al Shulchan Avihem. Woe to a father who had to exile his children, and woe to the children that were exiled from their father's table. Okay, now we're going to pick up on one piece of that story about the churvah. Tanu Rabbanan, Nei Shloshah Dvarim Ein Nichnasim L'Churvah. So we learned from Rabbi Yossi that you're not supposed to go into a churvah. Now we find out more detail. There's three different reasons not to go into a churvah, which of course is strange because once I'm not supposed to go into a churvah, I don't go. Why would I need three different reasons? We'll discuss. Nechshad, first of all, suspicion you're meeting somebody inappropriate to meet there, a woman. Mimneha Mapolet, because it may fall in on you. Umeh Mazikim, because demons infest places like that. So let's say, Nechshad, typical Misham Polet, so you mentioned Chshad. So why don't you just say, well, I can't go in there anyways because it's going to fall in. The answer is Bechadati. If it was freshly ruined and the building is still somewhat strong, then I don't have the concern that it's going to fall in, but I have Chshad. But typically Misham Mazikin, but I also don't need Chshad because I've got Mazikin. In other words, I can't go in there because of demonic infestation. So what do I need to add Chshad? The answer is betray. If there's two men there, two men won't be attacked by Mazikin. Evidently, that's one of the rules of Mazikin. So, I betray Chshad Namileka. So, if there's two men, there's also no Chshad, because that's why the rules of Yechud apply only when there's one man. So, the answer is betray Upritzi. If the two guys were licentious, then Chshad exists, but there's no Mazikin issue. Okay, good. So, we now understand why Chshad had to be introduced, because there's circumstances where that will be the only reason not to go into the Piritza, into the Churva. Now, we mentioned that it may cave in. Typically, we've got the other two reasons, meaning you got to construct a situation where Mapolet will be the only reason not to go in. The answer is betray Vakashri. If you have two good guys, they still can't go in because it may cave in. So now, mivnei mazikim, typically mivnei chashanu mapolot. So why do I need the reason of mazikim? Which, by the way, would mean that if I had a building that was just recently destroyed and I had two men who were good guys, they could go in because then none of the reasons apply. Mivnei mazikim, for typically mivnei chashanu mapolot. So why am I not concerned about the other pieces? In other words, where am I going to have a situation of mazikin where the others don't apply? If I have a newly destroyed building, so it's not going to cave in so quickly, and it's two guys who are good. So our whole piece was based on the idea that once you have two people, demonic infestation won't affect. The answer is, we're still concerned if we come to their place. They won't come attack us if we're in a group, but they may attack us if our group goes to them. I could be talking about one guy. If I have a newly destroyed building, but it's out in the field, it's not in the city. There is no concern about chashad because women don't generally hang out in the field. In other words, a new building, so therefore a polit doesn't apply. And since it's out in the field, there's no concern about chshad. And therefore, I do need the reason of mazikin. Okay, Tana Rabbanan. So we continue on this notion of the mishmerot. Arba mishmerot avei halayla, divrei Rebbe. Rebbe here has the position, there's four mishmerot during the night. Rabbi Natan Omer Shalosh, he says there's three. Now, this evidently is talking about heavenly mishmerot, because each city will just be doing what it does. My Tavid Rabbi Natan, why does Rabbi Natan say there's three? Dichtiv, Ayavok Gidon Umea, Ish Asher Itov, Mutzea Machaneh, Rosh HaShmorot HaTichona. When Gidon came to attack the Midianite camp in Enharod, he came at the beginning of the middle watch. Tana Ein Tichona, L'Shesh Tifanei Al-Achareha. And if it's a middle, that means there's one before and one after, or two before and two after, but nobody's suggesting five, so you can't have an even number. For Rebbe, my tichona, achat mea tichona, shebe tichonot. So Rebbe will say middle just means any of the middle ones. And this is the starting one, the ending one, or whatever's in the middle is in the middle. For Rebbe Natan says, miktiv tichona, shebe tichonot. Rebbe Natan says, it doesn't say one of the middle ones. Tichona aktiv, the middle watch. In my time of the Rebbe, why does Rebbe say there's four? Rebbe Zvika, I'm Rebbe Ami, I'm Rebbe Shimon Levi, katuv achar omer, chatzot laila, kum lo dot lach, mishpatei tzikacha. Because David says, I get up at midnight, and we're going to see more about David's nocturnal activities in the following piece. I get up at midnight to thank you for your laws. My eyes are up before watches. So that means there's two watches from midnight on. So there's four mishmarot. Midnight means you get up after two and before two, and David is up for two mishmarot. For Rabbi Natan, how will Rabbi Natan answer? That's how like Rabbi Shua, the non-Rabbi Shua merit shalosh shaot. That Rabbi Shua, as we'll see in the next Mishnah, says Kriyat Shema Shel Boker is until 3 hours, and there for Shkendach Malachim Lamot shalosh shaot, because there's a defined group of people who don't get up until 3 hours. That's princes, and so therefore David is up Ashmurot, meaning if we count on Ashmura as being a 4 hour unit, David is up 4 hours, 8 hours, or perhaps even 9 hours before the rest of the world if he gets up at midnight. This, by the way, supports the Shita of the Yireim, who says that Shalosh Sha'ot of Kriyat Shema, not only do the Rishonim agree, Shalosh Sha'ot of Kriyat Shema means until the beginning of the third hour. And that's based on this Gemara. And so therefore, David gets up at midnight. There's really only three Mishmarot during the night, but a Mishmaret is 4 hours, and therefore he's up 8 hours before everybody else. Ravashi says David could also be referring to a mishmeret and a half and call it mishmerot. Okay. So now the connection here is simply another tradition of tradition sequence and communication sequence according to Rabbi Shimon Levi. And if a mate, eladvar shomet, when you're in the presence of a mate that's not been buried yet, you're only allowed to speak about things that have to do with the mate. Typically, if you visit somebody who's doing Shemirah on a body, they're not learning Torah, they're not discussing anything else, they may be saying Tehillim. So one approach is to say, you're not allowed to study Torah, because it's kind of like making fun of the mate. You can't study anymore. But talk about business, who cares? The other version is, he says, you can't even study Torah, Certainly things that are frivolous or things that are not related to Torah, there's no justification for saying it. Okay, so now back to the Agadah that we saw a minute ago. David Palgadeliahavikai, since when is it true that David woke up at midnight? Beor Tavikai, he would wake up at the beginning of the night. Tichtiv, Kidamti Vaneshef Aishavea. I got up at the Neshef, we'll see what that means, and I prayed. Maidai Neshef Ortahu, how do we know that Neshef means nightfall? Dichtiv, Baneshef, Be'erav Yom, Bishon Laila Vafila. At the Neshef, which is when the day sets and it becomes dark. So what David meant in that pasuk, Kidam to Baneshef, is Me'olam lo avar lai chatzot lai b'shena. Sorry, the pasuk, chatzot lai lakum la'dodach, means David says, I never let midnight pass over while I was sleeping. Maybe sometimes I got up even earlier, maybe a nightfall, but I never let midnight pass. Zeir Amar, he has a different take. Ad chatzot laila, I mean, anem kasus. From nightfall until midnight, he would doze a little bit, like a horse. Then he'd get up and, like a lion, be strong and involve himself in Divrei Torah and Tishbachot. So he splits a little differently. He says he was studying Torah the first half of the night and praising God. We assume composing some praises to God all night. And so that's how we reconcile the psukim that indicate that David got up at midnight or David got up at the beginning of the night. Since when is Neshef mean beginning of the night? Neshef tzafrahu. Neshef is morning. This is when David goes and attacks the Amalekim, who attacked his camp in Siklag. He slaughtered them from Neshef until the Erev. So, doesn't that mean from morning till night? No, it means from night to night, Neshef to Erev. So, I'll use a consistent term, either from Neshef to Neshef, night to night, or Erev ad Erev. Why Neshef to Erev? He says Neshef really doesn't mean a particular time of night. It means a switching of times. So therefore, it could be when the day becomes night or when night becomes day. Neshef leili vati yamama, Neshef yamama vati leili. Therefore, the word will be used as an equivoque in Tanakh, sometimes meaning nightfall and sometimes meaning break of dawn. Okay, but David mihavi yale palgal eliyemat. Wait a second. The whole Agadah was premised on the idea that David, by midnight, was waking up or was switching what he was doing to Shirot v'tishpachot or never allowed midnight to pass him by sleeping. Since when did David know when midnight was? Hashtam Ashar Beinu Laviyada. Even Moshe didn't know when midnight was. Dichtiv kachatzot laila and halaila and yotzei b'toch mitzrayim. Moshe said to Paro, kechatzot halaila and yotzei b'toch mitzrayim, saying God's going to come out about midnight. So my kachatzot, what does kechatzot mean? This is makat pachorot. Ilema da amar leku chabrichu kachatzot. Did HaKadosh Baruch Hu say to Moshe kachatzot? Mi kasveka kamishvai. Does God not know when midnight, exact midnight is? Ela da amar le b'chatzot. That Hashem said to Moshe at midnight, ve'ata yuv amar kachatzot. And Moshe said, about midnight. Ela masafkale. Well, that's a little bit strange, but the notion is that no human can really figure out when midnight is, and therefore Moshe said it's going to be about midnight when that'll happen. For David Haviyada, so how could David know when midnight was if Moshe didn't know? It's a little bit strange because here it's not the question of Moshe knowing, it's a question of the Egyptians knowing when it was, and we'll see in a minute. The answer is David Siman Havile. David had an alarm clock that was built in to tell him when midnight was. The Amar of Acha Barizna Amar of Shimon Chasida, Kino Aya Talu Malim in Tatol Shel David. David had a lawyer that was over his bed. Exactly at midnight, a northern wind would come, and it would blow through and play the harp. He would get up and study Torah until dawn. And now we hear more of this Agadah. When dawn came, the Chachamim came in. We need to make money. How's the cash flow going to work today? Said, go do business with each other. Basically, the nation can't feed itself. Literally, that which the lion throws up won't feed him, and you can't fill a boar with the dirt that you took out of it. Meaning that we need to have some infusion of income from the outside. Okay, send out the army to do a raiding party. מיד יוצאים אחיתופה ונמלכים בסנהדרין ושואלים באורים בתומים. So what they would do is they would first take advice from Achitophel, who until later on was a trusted a counselor of David till he went to Avshalom and then eventually killed himself. Then they would take a final decision with Sanhedrin, and then they would ask the Urim B'Tumim to see what to do. What's the Pasuk? Here's it, my Kra. This is describing David's military hierarchy. So after Achitophel is Benayahu. Now Benayahu, of course, is the army. Achitophel is the yoetz. Achitophel is the advisor. V'chein omer batzat Achitophel asher yatzvei b'mekash yishal b'dvar ha'elohim. This is in defining why Avshalom took his advice. Benayahu bin Yehuda is a Sanhedrin. That's a reference to the Sanhedrin. Eviatar, we'll see why there's an Agadah later, why he's the Sanhedrin. V'eviatar elohim b'tumim, because Eviatar, of course, is the Kohen. is with the Kriti and Pleti, which is different groups of David's mercenaries, but we here define Kriti and Pleti as being the Urim B'Tumim. Of course, we've been to Nebuchadnezzar, wrote a famous commentary on Shulchan Aruch, Kriti and Pleti. V'amini krashmam Kriti and Pleti, Kriti shekortim divram, because they cut their words, very clear words, Pleti shemuflaim divram, their words are quite astounding. Harkach starts following El Chiyav, and then the army. Amr Yitzchak Bar Adav, Amr Lam Rav Yitzchak Bered Rav Yidi. Of course, that's a drasha. Harkach starts following El Chiyav is defining Hakretiv Apleti. Now, Maikra. So now, what's the pasuk that supports the idea that the harp would wake him up? Urach Vodi Urach Hanevel Vichinor Ayira Shachar. That my glory and the navel should wake me, and then I'll wake up the dawn. Zerma. Moshe Lam Haviyada, going back to the issue of Moshe and Paro, said Moshe, of course, knew when midnight was. The David Name Haviyada, David also knew when midnight was. The great people know exactly when midnight is. David Haviyada Kinor Lam Alei. So why did David need a Kinor? The answer is very simple. Or Mishnate. You might know when midnight is, but if you're asleep, you're not going to be able to wake up unless you have something to wake you. That's why he had the Kinor. Kevin Moshe Haviyada Lam Alei Remember Kachatzot. So why did Moshe say Kachatzot instead of Bechatzot? The answer is Moshe Kassav Hashem Yitu Itzdagline Faro. Paro's astronomers or astrologers are going to not know when midnight is. And then when Moshe says Kachatzot Abachatzot, and when on their calendar it's not exactly midnight, they're going to say Moshe's a liar. Of course, I believe that within the whole context of Makat Bachorot, they wouldn't be concerned about a minute or two, but nonetheless, that may explain why Kachatzot is. Should always be careful to say, I'm not sure. Because maybe you'll say something with exactitude. It won't come out exactly that way, or it won't be perceived that way, and it'll look like you're a liar. Rashi Amar Paga Orta Deflaitsonai Gabe Esavikai. He said, Kachatzot should not be understood as about midnight, but rather Chafa Dimyon. Hachikam Moshe de Israel, that Moshe was speaking a day earlier, and he said, Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu Machar Kachatzot Alayla. Kachatzot meaning just at this time. Meaning, just like now is Chatzot, so tomorrow is Chatzot, right? Ani Yotzei V'Tech Mitzvah. That's when Makat Bachorot will happen. And, of course, not all clear at all clear from the Pesukim whether or not this statement was made even much earlier than Yud Gimel B'Nisan of that year. Okay, we have some of Pesukim here about David and David's behavior at the night, etc., that we're going to explore. The David Shomran Nafshi Ki Chassidan. David says to Hashem, guard me because I'm a chassid. Levi Rabbi Yitzchak, Chadamar, Kachamar, Levinei Kodesh Baruch Hu. So what does it mean, I'm a chassid? Levi Rabbi Yitzchak. So one of them said, this is what he meant. Rabbanu Shalom, lo chassid ani, shkomachem yizvachem aravi shenim ad shalosh shaot, all other kings are sleeping till 3 hours, thus saban kriyat shma avani, chatzad layla kum adot lach, but I get up at midnight to praise you. V'idach Kachamar, Levinei Kodesh Baruch Hu. The other one said, no, what David said was, Rabbanu Shalom, lo chassid ani? Am I not a righteous or pious person? They're all sitting in their glory in little groups and with their entourage. I, in the meantime, have my hands dirty with blood and with placentas and etc. in order to be able to identify whether or not this woman is a Yoledet and she can be with her husband or not. In other words, he's ready to involve himself in the dirtiest areas of practical halachic ruling in order to help people out instead of sitting in his own glory. Lord Ella, Komashani Osan in Mefiboshet Rabbi. So there's a tradition that Mefiboshet, Mefibal, who was Yonatan's son, was David's Rabbi. And he said, anything that I do, I always check with it and make sure I'm right, which is the opposite of arrogance. I ask him, did I judge correctly? I wasn't embarrassed to ask him, even though he's a subject, and subject who's alive by my grace, as it were. Take a look in Shmuel Bet Perk Tet. And nonetheless, I'm not embarrassed to ask him. That's the Pasuk of Tehillim, where he says, I spoke of your laws in the presence of kings, and I wasn't embarrassed. There, Fiboshet, being the son of Yonatan, was from royal lineage. Tana, lom Fiboshet Shmo, ela Ishboshet Shmo. This is strange, because Mephibosheth, of course, Yonatan's son, his uncle is the Ishboshet, who is Shaul's other son, who is propped up as the king for a couple of years after Shaul's dead. Why is he called Mephibosheth? He was able to embarrass David b'halacha, meaning he was so much more brilliant. So David, who accepted this, David has a son named Kilav, his second son. It's recorded in Shmuel Bet Perek Gimel, and we never hear about him again. His name was Daniel. Why was he called Kilav? Because he's Machlim Av. He embarrasses David's father, David's Rebbe, that is. And he is so much more brilliant than David's Rebbe, so that it's David's comeuppance, if you will, for his allowing himself to be subservient to Mephibosheth. That's why Shlomo said, "B'niim chacham li b'chai yismach li b'gamani." In Mishlei, Shlomo says, my son, if you are wise, I'm also happy. My son is wise, I'm happy. And I'm able to respond to those who insult me. Okay, the last piece we're going to take a look here, it is at the issue of David, Mikari the Nafshe Chassid. Here we just saw an Agadah interpreting that David says I'm a Chassid because of this or because of that, because of my willingness to get involved in practical halacha to help people, or because I don't sleep late. Since when did David call himself a chassid? At the end of Tehillim Chav Zayin, says, "I hope to see God in the living land." The word lulei in a cloth of Tehillim has dots on top of it. Why are the diacritical marks? I know that righteous people have a sachar in the world to come. But I just don't know if I'm included with them. That's why lule means maybe I'll have a place. Because you promised me, but maybe in the meantime I've done something wrong to lose that promise. Rabbi Yaakov Bar Idi threw a contradiction. I mean, the two psukim at each other. God promised Yaakov when he took that sleep in Beit El, I'm going to guard you. 20 years later, when he comes back and is about to meet Esav, Yaakov is very afraid. Why is he so afraid? He said, yeah, God promised me that he would protect me, but maybe in the meantime I've done something wrong and I lost that promise. And that's based on a braita. Ketanya, Adyavram Chadunaya, Adyavram Zakanita, and Shirat Hayam. We describe, and here is not a case of Shema Yigram Achet, but where it really happened. And that is that that in Shirat Hayam, which is prophetic, and some of it is aimed towards the future, Mikdash Adonai Kondu Yadecha, etc., Tivim Titaimo. So Adyavram Chadunaya, Adyavram Zakanita. So even though that's poetic form, it's understood midrashically to mean, that's talking about now when we leave and we come back, we come to Israel with Yeshua. What's the second one? That's when we're going to come back under Shesh Batzar and Zerubbabel and Ezra and Nehemiah, the Shivat Zion. Which means that the second arrival in Israel after the destruction of the first Mikdash should have been as powerful and as impressive and as miraculous as the first one under Yoshua, Elishagar Machet. But because we sinned in the meantime, and the sin was that people did not want to go and didn't answer Koresh's Hatzara, therefore as a result of that, that great promise was lost, and we came back in a much more modest fashion, if you will. Okay, we'll pause at this point. We're going to pick it up with an analysis of Chachamim's position and the protection of Chatzot in the next podcast. In the meantime, everybody should have a wonderful day.